Let the trap!
You are listening to What the Truck!
Are you ready to truck? It is time for your Nooner with Tuner, your Fiver with the Drivers. Thank you for joining us. By the way, a little breaking news around 10:40 this morning. Did you feel it? Did you feel the shaker? There was a 4.8 magnitude earthquake that had been reported in New Jersey near Lebanon. Shaking had been felt throughout the Northeast. I've got friends in Massachusetts who reached out, although my sister, she's out that way. She didn't feel anything, but people in Connecticut, Pennsylvania, over in the Philadelphia area, New York City, New Jersey as well. Got to hear from Maine. I don't know. Maine, maybe all of New England, but the outcome of this is the FAA has issued ground stops at New York Liberty International Airport in New Jersey and JFK International Airport in New York City due to that 4.8. It says here, this is the third strongest earthquake to strike on record for the state in 280 years. This 4.8 is the biggest earthquake with an epicenter in New Jersey since 1783. Now, I believe this grounding all has to do with preliminary cautions because this just happened. Earthquakes, obviously very rare, especially one of that magnitude. I know you people in California are saying it's not that big of a deal. Haven't seen any reports on destruction, but again, a lot of reports haven't come in. Stay tuned to FreightWaves.com for any new details that may come up with that. But Aubrey Strobel has some good advice. She says, whatever you do, don't use this pitiful earthquake as an excuse to text your ex. Hey, if you get air freight in that airport or you're flying out of those two, check ahead before you head over there. Now, have y'all heard about the eclipse? Big eclipse coming on Monday. And people are kind of freaking out about it because there's been so many reports. Now, if you're directly in the path of totality on Monday, you're going to experience up to 4 minutes and 27 seconds of darkness. Here is a message from the Federal Highway Safety Administration and the DOT on what to expect.
Hello, I'm Federal Highway Administrator Shailen Batt. On April 8th, a total solar eclipse will take place across 13 states in the U.S., from Texas to Maine. Major cities will experience the eclipse, including Dallas-Fort Worth, Little Rock, Indianapolis, Cleveland, and Buffalo. While an estimated 32 million people live within the path of totality, millions more will travel to see the event firsthand. This rare event may be a once-in-a-lifetime for some, but could have widespread impacts on the traveling public. So please, plan ahead to arrive early and, if you can, stay put to avoid traffic congestion. If you have plans to drive with family and friends to see it, whether it's a short drive or a long one, find a safe place to park and watch this exciting event away from oncoming traffic. Don't watch the eclipse while driving and don't stop on the interstate or highway shoulder. For those who are traveling in the path of the eclipse, remember to turn on your headlights so you'll be extra visible during the darkness. And pay attention to construction work zones. Work may pause, but safety devices such as barrels and signs may still be in place. Traffic may be slower and lanes may be closed. While the solar eclipse will draw out more drivers, pedestrians and bicyclists are also eager to see it. We urge all drivers to watch out for them along the way and urge them to look out for cars. So please, everyone, look out for each other during this spectacular event. And as we said with the 2017 eclipse, don't have an eclipse in judgment. Be safe.
So all these reports, I got people freaking out, like this gas station here, Circle K says, make sure you get your fuel. And people are like, you know, is this a cover for something much bigger or something sinister? But here's what the DOT has to say. They felt that there's the reason they're sounding the alarm, the reason they're ringing the bell so much is they felt they didn't warn people enough in 2017. If you remember, like the biggest controversy in 2017 was, did Donald Trump look at the eclipse without glasses on? And this year it's like, you know, well, we can't haul any goods. You look at all those hotel outages. But the thing is, this happened in 2017. There's a bunch of hotels that got booked. There's a bunch of stores as people converge like locusts on some of these smaller towns that people are going to be going through. So make sure that you're careful out here with this. But here's something you also have to know. Texas DOT has put out that they are restricting, that it says right here, important notice regarding Monday, April 8th, Eclipse permitted load travel restrictions. There is over 80 communities here, about a 480-mile stretch through the state of Texas where vehicles, heavy hauls like that, you are not allowed through there. We have the full story of this with all of the counties and communities on FreightWaves.com. There's obviously too many to list, but they say that congestion, traffic levels are going to be four times their normal amount. So again, that's why they're getting this information out there. I put a poll out to the community to ask why all the panic? Why was everyone fearing? Almost 1,000 of you responded, and aliens took the top spot with 40.3. I don't think we have to worry about that. A lot of you were being reasonable. You're like, I think it's just, you know, it's an information Ouroboros. Hype begets hype. One story about these warnings goes viral, so everyone in the media starts doing more and more people start talking about it. But hey, be safe. There's going to be a lot of traffic going on. You might be in areas you're not familiar with driving. And obviously, if you're hauling freight, this could be very disruptive too. Texas, they said, hey, deal with it like you would any sort of single heavy blizzard, heavy type of weather event. And these are the same precautions that they're taking here. All right, let's get into the rundown. It's episode 702 of What the Truck. And on this one, I'm talking to Operation Lifesavers Jennifer DeAngelis about Eclipse readiness, being track aware of some of those freight disruptions. We get Dredging Contractor of America's William Doyle. He talks about the recovery and rebuilding surrounding the Key Bridge in Baltimore. We got Calvin University professor and some students. They're going to show off their awesome supply chain program, and we got Kinaxis Polymithyl Guthrie, who's going to talk a little bit about some of the disruptions to various industries that are occurring from the bridge collapse that happened. Now, right now, we get Jennifer Angelis, though, at Operation Lifesaver, who is going to make us aware of something that seems pretty logical. Jennifer, why shouldn't we stand on the tracks during the eclipse? Oh, Jennifer, you muted yourself. Can you unmute yourself, please? We got her? No, we don't got her. Okay, so guys in the back, work with Jennifer on getting her sound up. We'll go with this, and let's jump to the Calvin University students because they're sitting right there in the green room. Let's bring them right up. Hey, guys. Nice to meet you. Hello, everybody.
Good to see you.
Introduce yourselves, gentlemen.
I'm Jared. I'm a junior.
I'm Ethan. I'm a senior.
And I'm Professor Johnson, so I get to lead these guys in our awesome program here at Calvin.
Yeah, you run this pirate ship over there, don't you? Tell us a little bit about the program and what y'all get into over in Calvin.
Yeah, so Calvin, you know, we're one of, I guess, the few small Christian liberal arts schools that also have a program in what we call operations and supply chain management. So we touch everything from you know, sort of the ordering, the procurement side, all the way through logistics and even finished goods and delivery and some of the marketing stuff that goes into that and figuring out, you know, where do we ship and how do we ship. Very unique program, very small program, which is also a lot of fun. I get to know the students pretty well, which is great for me. But we have, you know, some different requirements, which is pretty neat. So I think you stumbled upon Ethan's TikTok video at one point where he's talking about a program and a requirement in our program where we take students around the world. And so, you know, as an undergrad, he has the opportunity, and Jared was with him this year. We went to Mexico for a couple weeks in January, and we visited 12 different companies or organizations like this picture here. This is with the American Chamber of Commerce in Monterey. And we had great opportunities and great meetings where we could actually sit down with business leaders and just learn from them and understand what do they see and what's going on in their world. And that level of, I'll just say, sort of strategic guidance and importance was something that we intentionally built into the program and makes the program unique and also a heck of a lot of fun. So, yeah, as we go through the pictures here, I would say one other thing that I'm pretty proud of is we got to do some cultural activities as well, whether it's going to the Cathedral of Monterey or, you know, here's a picture of a park called Parque Fundidora, which is actually an old foundry. So we were able to visit all these different companies and learn from the leaders, but also had a lot of fun doing it. And you know, hopefully they'll tell you a little bit more about that experience, but also then you know, answer any other questions that you have about the program in general.
Well, let me ask them, because you're a little biased. Obviously, this is your program. Let's ask the students here. Yeah. Why did you guys join the program? What do you want to learn about supply chain?
So what really interested me was just seeing the product be manufactured and managed throughout its entire lifespan. And I liked kind of having that control over the entire thing and not really just of like the marketing side of it. And then just making things cost efficient and like just like timely and everything was really something that I enjoyed. And I liked the problem solving aspect of operations and supply chain management.
How about you?
Originally, Go for it.
Jump in.
I originally didn't want to do accounting or finance or marketing for that matter. And I'm like, I'll try supply chain. And I was liking it a lot. And then after the Monterey trip, I kind of fell in love with the idea of maybe being on a floor of a factory, like a manager, kind of moving the project along. I like getting things done and I like solving problems as well. So I really, really fell in love with supply chain.
You know what video recruited me? I was on your TikTok. It just happened to end up in my feed. It was a video of your trip. I believe there's a student named Ethan from there who introduced this. We have a little clip from that. Can you guys roll the tape so the audience can get an idea of this trip?
Hey, everyone. My name is Ethan Bolins, and here's what I got to experience on my supply chain class trip to Monterey, Mexico. We begin each day with breakfast at the hotel. Then we would go visit a company like Genie to tour their factory. They manufacture aerial lifts and material handlers made for construction. On one of our days, we got to visit the American Chamber of Commerce to learn more about education and business relations between the U.S. and Mexico. For lunch, we would have big group meals at different restaurants and then spend the afternoon touring another company. This day, we went to Steelcase, which manufactures office furniture. The team at Steelcase talked to us about how they support global operations in areas like supply chain management, logistics, materials management, product design, and quality. And this was the view from the office. Over the weekend, we went to the Metro Cathedral, rode horses, and then hiked to see a waterfall. We also walked around Villa de Santiago, toured an old steel mill, visited a museum, and we also went ziplining. Thanks for watching.
Wow. How was that? Did you all get to go on that trip? Tell me a little bit about how it was like to actually be there.
Yeah, so I was the one who did make that video. But we all really enjoyed it. Like, you could ask anyone who went on the trip, and we all just loved it. We learned so much on it. I think just being in class and learning all the ideas and just like things about supply chain, and then going to Mexico and actually seeing those like come to life and have examples of what we're learning was just huge for our education. And then we just got like really close during that trip. Like, we did a lot of things together. We were with each other the entire time. It wasn't all just supply chain majors. We had like engineers, marketing, accounting, finance. So kind of just bringing everyone together and being with each other all the time just made it like we were on vacation with our friends, just learning about supply chain. It looked like an awesome experience.
Some of the truckers in my network were like, oh, this is what these supply chain operations people do. They just sit around and go ziplining while I'm out here moving America on 18 wheels. Philip, I love the program. I think it is awesome. How do people like get enrolled? How would someone join this program?
Yeah, so, anybody's welcome to try to come to Calvin. We're just like any other university, right? We have students that go through an enrollment process. So once you enroll, you can come. We're part of the school of business here at Calvin. And then you just get involved. This course, as Ethan and Jared talked about, is required for all supply chain majors. So if you are in the program, you go on a course like this. I say like this because we do Mexico. Next year, we're also doing Europe, probably do Brazil long term. And really, it's about understanding that global trade piece of how the supply chain works and how our students can get involved in it and giving them the experience that Jared had where he's like, hey, this is what I want to do. And that's so exciting and engaging for me to hear, obviously. It's a ton of fun, and I'm happy to hear that they like my type of vacation, which is going through factories. So that's great to hear as well.
Hey, Ethan, what do you want to do after school when you graduate from this thing?
Mm-hmm. So me and my fiance are moving down to South Carolina, and still looking for a job, but I would love to get into, you know, somewhere in the industry with like continuous improvement, procurement, either just like a supply chain management role, just stuff like that. I would love to stay in the industry and kind of just work my way up.
And Jared, how about yourself?
I just want to be on a factory floor and
just on the floor
product and get stuff done. Just produce some big machines would be awesome.
Well, hey, you guys, thank you so much for introducing the program to us. Calvinuniversity.edu, calvinuni.edu.
Yeah, calvin.edu. And if you go, you can look up supply chain management. If anybody wants, my email address is right on the website. It's the easiest way to get in touch with us. You know, whether you're interested in being a student or you just want to learn more about the program, you know, we'll definitely help you out. Or if you're interested in hiring Ethan as he moves to Springfield, South Carolina, that'd be another thing, right?
So give him a shot.
Happy to support.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, guys, thank you so much. Thank you so much for stopping by and introducing the program to us. Take care.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having us.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Meanwhile, for on to give you a brief PSA about why you shouldn't stand in the road during an eclipse, why you shouldn't park your truck in the middle of the road, because look at this lady here. She's in the middle of the road. One of my truck driver friends, he's coming down the road here. He sent this video over to me, and if you see here, it appears she's fine somehow. Like, I don't know how she's so resilient. She got hit by an entire semi. She's going to woke up feeling like she got hit by a semi. Her cell phone went flying, but you know what? Her shoes did not fly off. So maybe that's what saved her. Anyways, Jennifer DeAngelis, why should we not stand in front of the train tracks during an eclipse?
Because you should always expect a train. Trains are running even during an eclipse, leading up to during and after the eclipse. So you want to stay off and stay away from railroad tracks.
What is the issue? Because the trains are running during the eclipse, right? But a lot of people, there's going to be a lot of traffic, a lot of congestion. On a sunny day, enough trucks accidentally hit trains and pedestrians get hit. So what's the big concern on Monday?
Well, there's twofold, right? Folks are going to be traveling oftentimes in areas where maybe they haven't been before. And, you know, a lot of those areas in the line of totality have a lot of railroad tracks throughout the communities, throughout the states. So it's important to recognize the signs and to follow the signs and to always, always expect a train. Whenever you see tracks, think train. Don't park your vehicle near the tracks. Don't stop on the tracks. Don't walk near or on the tracks if you're viewing the eclipse. It's really, really important. You know, trains are big. They can't stop quickly. It takes, a freight train traveling 55 miles an hour, a mile or more to stop. So it's really important that folks who may or may not already know these messages, right, that they remind themselves and their families and the folks they know who are traveling, who may not know that trains are faster and quieter than we think they are.
Yeah, I can see people not thinking about this. Yeah. They start seeing the darkness. They start seeing the eclipse roll in. They stop their car. They get out. They want to take a picture. There's active trains still rolling through. You've got to be track aware. Now, what happens if you get stuck on the train tracks during this eclipse?
That's a fantastic question. So if you ever get stuck or stalled on the railroad tracks, you want to get out of your vehicle immediately and get away from the tracks. And then you want to look for a rectangular blue and white ENS sign. It's an emergency notification system sign. Every place where the road crosses the tracks, there are ENS signs, and you can call the number on the ENS sign and it will directly link you with the railroad. And there's a crossing ID at each location that you want to give them. You also want to have that information if you call 911, right? You want the folks at the operators and the dispatchers to be able to reach the railroad as well.
Jennifer, people who need more information about this, they want to connect with Operation Lifesaver. Where should I send them to?
That's another fantastic question. You can you can get information about us at OLI for Operation Lifesaver Inc. OLI.org. I have one more safety message if I have enough time.
Yes. Deliver it.
Train bridges and trestles have no room for anything but the train. So that's another place that you want to avoid all the time, but especially if you're going to watch the eclipse. Don't go on a train bridge. Don't go near a train tunnel. That seems less likely in this case. But stay off the train bridges, because when the train comes, there is only room for the train. There's not room on either side So you want to make sure that you are tunnel always would be crazy a, tracks making
tunnel way. Would be a bad place to view an eclipse. Trains or no hard. Trains. I'm not going to have a great view in there, Jennifer. Well, hey, thank you very much. Operation Lifesaver, check him out. Be track aware on Monday. Don't be a moron. Don't stand on the middle of the tracks. Don't be a video that I play here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. All right, everybody. Elsewhere, by the way, how's your commute to work? Check this out right here. Very fitting, too, because we're kind of talking boats next. But look at this. This guy's going on the Arctic. He's got to take the bridge on here, and he's got to board this vessel as it's moving in the Arctic. There's a rope ladder that comes down. I can see he maintained 2 points of contact between that bridge and the rope, but your margin of error is none. You slip right there, you're falling right into that freezing cold water, and that boat's just going to keep going. That'll be your last day on the job. Justin Wood says, imagine missing that jump. Yeah. Big Head says these guys better be making $400,000. And John Filson says this is like climbing onto a moving train until they change the regulations. And Christine Oliveira says, I'm waiting for OSHA to come slithering out of the ice to issue a violation. I don't know. They might have some kind of exemption. It's William Doyle, though, CEO at Dredging Contractors of America. And man, it has been a long almost 2 weeks for you now, or week and a half.
Yeah, it's been quite something. But Things look pretty good as of last night with the unified command of the Army Corps of Engineers. But Timmy, I just want to say thanks for getting me on the show, and we can have a discussion and open to any questions that you may have.
Yeah, well, let's just introduce you to everyone. What's your sort of role, and what's your role in all of this sort of rebuild?
Yeah, so my name is Bill Doyle. You can call me Billy. I'm the CEO for the Dredging Contractors of America. I was also the executive director for the Port of Baltimore for 3 years before coming to the Dredging Contractors of America. Merchant Mariner, Mass Maritime Academy graduate, sailed on ships for 10 years as a marine engineer, and also a former federal maritime commissioner appointed by Barack Obama, and then stayed on for a year with Donald Trump. So what we're doing now is this was a huge maritime response to this incident, the bridge collapse, Francis Scott Key bridge collapse in the Port of Baltimore. Ships came from all over the East Coast, some from the Gulf Coast. Tugs, barges, crane barges, salvage equipment, 3 different salvage companies. This is going on continuously since about the day after, the Wednesday after the bridge collapsed.
Wow. This had to especially hit home for you. You used to be the director over there, as you mentioned. And when I used to have you on the show, we were talking about dredging the Port of Baltimore, the expansion you were doing. What was that Tuesday morning like for you when you heard this? Were you phoned up immediately? Did your team have to jump in on this?
It was about 3:10 a.m. My phone was, usually keep it on, the vibrate and on it. And it was clicking and buzzing. And, I looked and I said, oh, boy. Because the video was immediate. Whoever had that video put it out, and you saw the bridge come down, and it was gut-wrenching to see that. And then it was, okay, I know that we're going to need vessels and dredges and salvage operation. Let me start rounding the troops around the country to see, the marine construction and dredging companies, see what their availability is, because they're going to have to get to Baltimore once the search and rescue operations were completed. So search and rescue is looking for survivors. Then you get into recovery and salvage operations thereafter. So equipment, vessels started showing up immediately. And, a big thing, Tim, is the job impacts. And when you look at the Port of Baltimore, so it's the largest exporter of coal in the United States. A lot of people don't know that. So your trains, your train engineers, and the coal miners in West Virginia have stopped working, right? Because the mines are in West Virginia, the rail lines bring it into the Port of Baltimore. So that's one of the things about Baltimore, that it's a multi-purpose port. It's not just containers. It's not just railroads and farm equipment and automobiles. There's so much more in the Port of Baltimore. And of course, my friends at the ILA, the union, they're out of work. The truckers, they're out of work. Anyone who does drayage and trucking for the Port of Baltimore. So, it was get on the spot, get on the job, and let's scan this, let's survey it, let's get the sonar equipment out, and how quick can we get this port operating?
Bill, you make some amazing points there. You also mentioned that, you know, last night you seem to be happy about some positive developments. We have a picture of the Army Corps of Engineers plan. Tell us a little bit about what is going. Yeah, show that picture. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on now.
So the good news is what we have now is that's the salvage plan.
Yeah.
So the salvage plan, when you look at the salvage plan, number one, was to get the main shipping channel open. Okay. Now there's a 1A, and the 1A is to have what's known as your alternate channel. Okay. And that is the news that came out last night, is that there will be another channel within the channel. It'll be 35 feet deep, 280 feet wide, and that will be open by the end of April. Okay.
Wow.
And then by the end of May, the Army Corps of Engineers is shooting for the entire 700-foot channel, 50 feet deep channel, to be open. So what you're looking at on that screen right there is you see the trusses that are in the water. You clear the trusses out of the area, and then there's debris in the 50-foot channel, which the Army Corps calls wreckage. So the wreckage, the deck, the asphalt, the concrete is in the channel. All right, so that debris and wreckage will be cleaned out as well. But we believe that the trusses, through the Army Corps of Engineers, once they're removed and some of the wreckage, will be at 35 feet, and then we get to 37 to 40 and 41 feet on that 280-foot channel. And that will be open, and we'll have one-way traffic coming in and out of Port of Baltimore, and that would be some container traffic, Ro-Ro, autos, relatively quickly. I said that from the beginning that once the private sector got on site, and once we had the survey vessels and the sonar equipment and the LIDAR, light detection and ranging, it was going to move relatively quickly, quicker than most people would imagine after seeing the video of the bridge come down to get operations up and running. Now, we still have the task ahead of us. We've got to get it done, right? So the dates are on the table, end of April, end of May, and everybody in the United States maritime industry is pulling together to get Baltimore open again. And it's something to be a part of. And I got to hand it to the public officials, the Army Corps of Engineers, the U.S. Coast Guard, you know, two of your key agencies that are in the Unified Command, the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore, the mayor, Brandon Scott. Everybody is working together. And, you know, the private sector, they take orders from the Unified Command, but private sector is the one that will pull this back together from a operation standpoint.
Bill, where do all the are they taking containers off that ship? Where do they go now? What happens to those that are on the dolly?
So at some point, so that would be when you look at the plan, number two is move the vessel. Okay. So discussions are going on to remove the containers off the vessel. And that would be similar to what happened with the Ever Forward. Baltimore has experience in that area, has experience in removing what you would say ship to ship transfer of containers, which normally doesn't happen. Okay.
Yeah.
One of the first time it was ever done in the United States was when the Ever Forward ran aground in Baltimore. So some containers may be picked off the bow of the ship, the dolly, put on a barge, and then that barge would go somewhere, maybe to the container terminal, back to the container terminal. So all of the debris and the metal, this is an interesting point. The debris, the wreckage, the trusses, that's all going to Trade Point Atlantic. Trade Point Atlantic is the old Bethlehem Steel shipbuilding yard and ship manufacturer and steel manufacturer. That is now a big distribution center warehousing district within the county of Baltimore. So you've got Under Armour, FedEx, and Amazon distribution centers, Home Depot, all over the place. And when they break ground to build these distribution centers, they find steel that was there from decades before of shipbuilding. And what they needed to set up inside of Trade Point Atlantic is a steel handling recycling facility. So they have a recycling facility that actually handles the steel and then sends it to the Midwest. It gets melted down and put back into the market. Or it could go to export. And then they also have, because it's an industrial space, is they have a material handling facility. And that is your crushers and screeners. So they're going to be able to handle the road debris that's in the channel. And they'll be able to manage that and crush it up and screen it and make it work. So that's only 1.5 miles by water from where this accident, you know, the bridge came down.
Does it seem like everyone has it together? Is there strong command over this? Is there a strong plan in place? Do we even know when the bridge is going to come together? Or is that not the focus? The focus is clear this out and do that plan.
Yeah, it's clear it out and do that plan. I mean, from my standpoint, I'm maritime, right? So, you know, it's the ship, it's the channel. Others will make the decision on the bridge. The command and control is excellent. The commander in charge of this operation is Captain Dave O'Connell. He's the captain of the port for the United States Coast Guard. And also from the Army Corps of Engineers, Esti Pinchazin, she's the colonel for the Baltimore District. But as you can see from the TV, you had General Spellman. All right. So he is the head. He's the commanding general of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and chief engineers. And then you have Brigadier General John Lloyd. He's on the theater, too. So you've got a big response of command and control in the theater, in the place that, you know, directing traffic. And I feel you can feel that, you know, the operations are going. I don't think people who are watching the day to day ever thought that we'd have ship traffic, significant ship traffic moving, you know, within 45 days. And no. That's what we're shooting for.
Now, some people have asked, why was that bridge like sort of never retrofitted? Why was it never made to more safer bridge standards with like the dolphins or the artificial islands?
I don't know. So the bridge, the way the bridge worked in the Port of Baltimore worked, you know, that's a different department.
Yeah.
And you know, within the Maryland Department of Transportation, you know, for me, I keep hearing comparisons to, you know, what happened down in Tampa in 1980. The difference here is this was actually, the whole thing was caught on video. The entire thing was caught on video. So, you know, the momentum of that ship hitting the bridge, you know, that, you know, it knocked it out. So we are seeing bridges being built now in the country that are more sturdy, right? If you look at the Bayonne Bridge, you know, that was built for a maritime purpose recently within the past 5 years. You've got the Gerald Desmond Bridge out in, you know, Los Angeles, Long Beach area. So there will be a lessons learned on, you know, when the bridge is rebuilt, you know, what is the safety and security around it? What's the overbuild? What's the engineering? This is going to remain for a long time. I think that you could probably see most states that have a port or maritime infrastructure are probably evaluating their bridges right now.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot of sense. Well, hey, thank you for giving us so much clarity on what has happened with this event. I can imagine what's running through your mind when you saw that early Tuesday morning. I know what was going through mine. It was rough to see. Sure. But in the meantime, people want to follow you. They need the help of Dredging Contractors of America. Where do I send them to?
You can send them to www.dredgingcontractors.org. Hey. Dredging Contractors of America is also on LinkedIn. So that's where you can send them. And, you know, pretty easy to get in touch with through let's say LinkedIn or something like that.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for your time. We'll check in on you again as this develops and we'll get information. I imagine it'll probably be monthly with so much happening over there. But again, thank you so much for your time today. And hey, go Sox.
Hey, go Sox, Tim. All right, take care. And once again, and listen, you got to get some of that Denley's pizza next time you go up there.
Will do. Will do. By the way, they got an earthquake over there. They had a little shaker. All right. Hey, take it easy. No, I do. All right, how do you fly? Speaking of airplanes, right here. over in your first business or Corgi class. James Rhodes says, this is a little known perk called the Who's a Good Dog upgrade. Stephen Barnelli says, the frequency of my daughter's voice when she saw this nearly broke the windows in my office. And Juan Buena says, the dog by default has a better credit score than half the country. And Brittany Pemben says, recently I passed the Target dog on a flight. I walk right past him in first class. He had his own seat as I headed to coach. All right, let's end the week here with Polly Mitchell-Guthrie. She's VP Industry Outreach and Thought Leadership over at Kinaxis. Polly, we set you up pretty well. We were just talking to some of the people in charge of putting this bridge and that port back together.
Absolutely.
How you doing today?
That's a good thing. I'm doing well. How about you?
Introduce yourself. If someone hasn't heard of like Kinaxis before, what's the elevator pitch on what you all do?
Sure. We are a global leader in supply chain management. We work with big brand name companies you've heard of, everything from brands like household names like Unilever, Procter & Gamble, and Bose, but also companies like Terex that makes bucket trucks or Hitachi Construction Machinery that makes dump trucks. And we help them plan for all kinds of things that might happen, such as a bridge collapsing, but also how to make the stuff, how to get the stuff they need and get those dump trucks to customers. And we do that because we have a platform that has a patented technique called concurrency that allows you to synchronize your supply chain in real time. We power it with human-centered AI, and we allow them to plan for anything that might happen. And goodness knows, things happen, like bridges collapsing.
Things happen. So from your perspective, what happened when this bridge collapsed? What are you starting to learn from your customers and from your data and from your position here?
Well, you know what? I think the thing that really strikes me is I'm actually thinking back to something that William just said, which is that we didn't know, nobody could have guessed that we would be able to have the bridge or, you know, a route through up and running in 45 days. And what our customers are thinking about is that bridge goes down, there's something that happens. I mean, we've got customers all around the world. We're a global company. Something's happening everywhere all the time for every one of our customers. So it's not just what's happening in Baltimore. It's happening in all those locations. And what are we going to do when any of those things happen? Yeah. And the challenge is that we don't know, is that bridge going to be down? Is that port going to be disrupted for 4 hours, 4 days, 4 weeks, 4 months? We don't know. And so we have to plan in advance, make our best plan for the supply chain, use AI to predict as much as we possibly can, and then be prepared for that disruption that's inevitably going to be happen. And not only that it's going to happen, but we don't even know how long it's going to impact us. So our customers tend to have scenarios on the shelf of what are we going to do, and then they adjust as they have to do.
So how are the industries that are probably most sort of hit by this are you have auto, you have farm machinery. Do you have any clients in those verticals? Those are the most immediate ones that they have to think about other ports. They really have no other choice. And in fact, they might actually have freight on that dolly right now.
Absolutely. So automotive is a big industry for us. Ford, GM, examples of customers of ours. Also industrial, you know, we talk about the big heavy equipment coming off those boats. So things like we have some customers in the farm equipment business, as well as, like I said, dump trucks, digger trucks, big cranes. And so what they're thinking about, again, is what am I going to do now? And where else am I going to go? The news I'm seeing is that the auto companies, for example, are saying they don't expect a substantial impact right away. But that's because supply chains, the complexity of a supply chain is really that we have combinatorial impacts of these disruptions. So I was catching up earlier this week with two friends who work in both trucking and in rail. And, you know, we have these overlaying systems of trucking connects to shipping, connects to rail, and each of them are disrupted, and they're disrupted in different ways, and they have different constraints. And then those feed into the broader supply chains, which again have different long supply chains disrupted in different ways. And so what we help the companies think about is they can't just think about what's happening at the port. They actually have to think about, okay, what's going to be that impact of everything from, am I waiting on raw materials to build something? Am I waiting on finished goods to get to my customer? What's going to be that impact across production schedules, across on-time delivery, across whatever I need to order? They have to think that whole big picture because the supply chain is a chain by nature. Everything is connected.
Yeah, so, well, that's good news. They don't think that the impacts from this will be felt long-term. They're expecting them to be absorbed, or sort of any of these risk managers or your AI models concerned about any congestion that may be happening, because this was just another moving part that happened. We already had a story going on right before that bridge collapsed about how Red Sea diversions and Panama Canal water levels had already bring congestion to ports like Vancouver.
Right. Right. And I've been paying a lot more attention to both the Panama Canal as well as the Red Sea, because those are longer term disruptions of these routes. And so this disruption in Baltimore is really constraining an already constrained system, which is that the flow of goods across the sea, the Panama Canal, that is a long term disruption. It is not going to get better next week. We don't need just a big rainfall. It is a long-term disruption because of climate change impacting the water level in the canal. And then over in the Red Sea, we've also got big issues with the rebels. And again, another one of these scenarios where we actually don't know, is that going to be, it's not likely to be resolved next week. This is probably a long-term geopolitical issue. And it's an example of each of those disruptions, in fact, showcase the fact that one is caused by geopolitics, one is caused by climate change, and one is just caused by just stuff happens, you know, kind of freak acts of God. And so we always know that there are labor strikes at issue, you know, potentially affecting all of the eastern ports. And so these are all kinds of disruptions that impact supply chains. Again, we can't afford to get overly focused on one. We have to look at all of them. What are they happening? How are they impacting our network, and what are we going to do about it?
Well, yeah, and it's like Bill said, what's really important about the Port of Baltimore, what's important to understand is that even though this can be absorbed, where they really feel that impact is in that region, in that community, everything that touches Absolutely. The supply chain. As you mentioned, it's interconnected webs. So you have all the warehouses, DCs, all the fabrication places, all the places that worked in concert with that port. They're offline until that port gets back up online, which could be sustained, could be rough, but it sounds like they got a good teamwork on, and they're going to be back and better than ever. But you said something interesting too, as did Bill. When would you ever predict these would happen? So how do you predict or prepare these partners of yours for these sort of disruptions that can happen at any time at night too?
Absolutely. Well, what we know, it's a sort of like death and taxes. In a supply chain, we know a disruption is going to happen. And so the question is, what kind of disruption, where is it going to happen, what's it going to impact, and what are we going to do about it? And so the concurrency technique that we have is about saying, okay, like I said, we can't just look at when we think about supply chains, we talk about plan, source, make, deliver, and return, all these stages of a supply chain. So obviously what's happening right now is that a disruption at a port is going to impact delivery. And delivery can be our raw materials, as I said, upstream in the supply chain. It can be impact customer delivery. But since it's a chain and since it's connected, we have to look at, okay, do I have to rejigger my production schedule? Do I have to order different materials? Do I have to find alternate routes, almost certainly, to get whatever I'm trying to get off those boats to wherever I need it to get to. And so what we do is we try to figure out, okay, if I make a decision, if I choose an alternate route, for example, what's that impact going to be? It's because we have to think about not just transportation and logistics, but what impact is that going to have, say, on my production schedule? What impact is that going to have on the customer that's saying, Walmart is saying, I don't care if you had something happen to you, I expect you to be on time in full according to the standards we require. So we have to look at what adjustments do we make across our network at the same time, and what concurrency allows you to do is to make any change in the system, create a scenario to evaluate that impact, and look at that impact across the whole system.
Wow. Hey, Polly, this has been really, really interesting. Where do people find more information from you or from the company? How do they connect?
They can certainly find me on LinkedIn and also find Kinaxis on LinkedIn. We love to have people follow us. And Kinaxis is kinaxis.com. So we'd love to have people learn more about what we do and how we can help prepare for the inevitable disruptions.
Interesting. Any predictions for the rest of the year? You think more chaos?
Absolutely. The only thing predictable is more chaos. But we're gonna be ready to roll with it.
You think the eclipse is going to go fine? You think everything will be fine? People are getting a little freaked out because there's so many alerts. But as I said at the beginning of the show, the DOT is like, we didn't give you enough in 2017. We want to make sure that you're not stuck in a bunch of traffic and confused for why 200,000 people are in a grocery store for a town of like 10,000.
You know, we've been having the moon cross the sun since the beginning of time. So I think we're going to be okay. That's my
I think we'll be okay. Well, Polly, it was great to meet you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You have an amazing weekend and take care.
Thank you. You too.
Take it easy. And all of you, hey, thanks for tuning in today. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not sure if those shutdowns are still going on over at those airports in New York. Definitely check freightwaves.com. And obviously with the airports themselves, especially if you have freight over there or you are taking a flight. WrestleMania is this weekend. Will Cody finish the story? My kids are so psyched. It's going crazy in my house. Hey, we got more supply chain education on Monday. We've got the University of Arkansas, Woo Pig, right over there talking about their supply chain program. We got John Oldman talking about a truck race and beauty pageant. And we got the great Matthew Leffler talking about some of the law and law breakers, rule breakers going on in this industry. You find this show on FW What the Truck on social media. Look on FreightWaves YouTube channel. Just look up What the Truck or on any podcast player. Are on SiriusXM's Road Dog Trucking Channel 146. Find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. That's DOONER. Take care and don't be a stranger.